As touching the Americans, Israel will strike them without mercy, but also the Palestinian terrorists will likewise do this. 96. In contrast to the Palestinians, the Israelis will be able to count on the aid of America and of many misled people of many countries, while the Palestinians will only have a few Arabic states behind themselves. 97. But on the whole, it must be said that the one like the other is addicted to false actions and to murderous, inhuman, inhumane, life criminal, and human criminal actions and deeds, as this will be the case with the autocratic Americans who, more and more, want to take on the role of a powerful, merciless, and irresponsible world police force and, at the same time, tread on the dignity of human beings in the manner described, like with a large foot, according to the principle, if you don't want to be my slave, then I'll beat your brains out, like you always say. Translator's note, to have seen the light of world is an idiom that simply means to have been born. Billy, then, in the end, Arafat won't be able to prevail, whereby then, perhaps, the prophesied war in Palestine and Israel will arise, with which the people should wade ankle deep in human blood. Quetzal, 98. That is correct. 99. This possibility will be given. 100. Therefore, it will also just depend on the common sense of the nations and world leaders to prevent the insanity of the war. 101. But if nothing is done and if nothing is set against the Israelis and against the Palestinian extremist radical forces and Arab fanatics and against their murderous, degenerate, and hate-filled craft, then the danger of the fulfillment of the prophecies will be very great. Billy, unfortunately, the Earth people don't let themselves be taught by reason and logic. Reason and logic make no difference to them, as also real love and brotherly love, as responsibility, peace, freedom, harmony, and balance. Even in families, all these high values are disowned, and everything that should be treated with dignity and respect is despised and abused. Parents beat their children, as also husbands beat up their wives or wives maltreat their husbands. And just as this happens in many families or in other human communities, it also occurs in the workplaces, where hatred, envy, and harassment often cause the greatest misery. This likewise applies to economic life and, of course, to politics, as well as to religious centers, like in monasteries and sects, where the monks or believers conduct themselves hypocritically among one another, with the superiors constantly trying to gain advantages for themselves and presuming themselves as better than their fellow men, fellow believers, and fellow monks, etc. And if one observes Israel and Palestine as well as America and Arabia in particular, it is alarming to note that the extremists, fanatics, radicals, fundamentalists, and degenerated nationalists of these countries are crazy, insane, unscrupulous, and poor in consciousness creatures, to whom a human life isn't even worth the speck of a fly. I became acquainted with many of these unscrupulous madmen when I joined a large group as a freedom fighter, in order to search for a killer who had brutally murdered my fiancé and deliver him to justice. Quetzal, 102. This and many other things from your life are well known to me. 103. I am sorry for the many events and pains that you had to let yourself go through. 104. But you have led a remarkably adventurous life, so it was inevitable that such incidents happened on your way. 105. You have grown from this, however, and thereby acquired the capacity to pursue a goal once set by you for so long until you reached it. 106. You've acquired such perseverance and steadfastness, through which you alone can fulfill your mission. 107. This, entirely apart from your knowledge in reference to the teaching of the Spirit. 108. I can say this now because through my own investigations, I encountered extremely interesting things that concern you and all your previous personalities in past lives, namely back to Enoch's time. 109. But don't worry that I speak of this because I know that for the time being, everything must remain a mystery, at least to your group members and the public. 110. Tua will be the first one who will talk openly about this, when he personally comes in contact with you again in a public manner. 111. But from now on, you no longer need to appear so ignorant towards me, as you've always done this until now, because I now know very well that, at least in terms of the teaching of the spirit and all related matters, you are more knowledgeable than me and even Tua and our spirit leaders, whom you will approach in later years when your health has improved again, in order for them to receive specific instructions from you. Billy, aha, there, you also gave a prediction. So according to your words, I will come out of my poor health situation and will then be able to work properly again. Quetzal, 112. That is only partly true, for your health will probably make very encouraging progress, but you will no longer be able to live without a greater amount of medication, which you must take twice a day. 113. Also, your health will no longer be the same as before, for certain consequences will remain that cannot be corrected anymore. 114. You also won't be able to perform any hard manual labor, which is why you will have to limit yourself in writing, office and administrative work, and in teaching. 115. Also, with regard to engines, no opportunity of working in a manual way is given to you anymore, not just for now but also for all future time of your present life. 116. But this also has something good in itself because now, you can finally just devote yourself to your real mission, and you can do all those written works that are related to your task. Billy, thank you for your remarks. I don't like it that I can no longer chop, dig, pave, plant, plow, harrow, drive tractor and so on, but on the other hand, it is also good that I can finally devote myself to all those written and oral works, etc. that had to be neglected by me until now, due to all the construction work at the center. Quetzal, 117. That, my friend, should be enough for today. 118. I'm going now, but I will visit you again on December 2nd. 119. Farewell until then. Billy, bye, Quetzal. Thanks for your visit and all the information. Until we meet again. 213th Contact Tuesday, December 2nd, 1986, 3:17 a.m. Billy, you have already endeavored for quite some time around the interests of Jmanuel and also clarified the things around his tomb site. So you know, just like I do, where his tomb site is. Recently, archaeologists and others step into appearance, claiming that they, with great probability, have found the tomb. Does that correspond to the facts? Quetzal, 1. The fact that the tomb, that is the tomb cave, is sought for corresponds to the truth, but the correct site wasn't found because some time ago, I had destroyed this by order of the High Council, and to be sure, completely, by what means also the hillside collapsed and buried everything. 2. The reason for this was so that no new Christian cult site could arise from this. 3. This would be the case and would have happened with certainty, if the tomb cave had been found. 4. A new malicious cult would have arisen from this, which would have taken on even worse proportions than what is the case today with the alleged birthplace of Jmanuel in Bethlehem. 5. As you know, the site wasn't even where today's Christian cults are held, regarding the alleged birthplace, etc. 6. However, this doesn't bother the cult superiors, so they won't accept this truth and also won't disclose it. 7. But so, it will be that the tomb cave of Jmanuel will continue to be sought for, and already, a place has been localized, which should serve as Jmanuel's tomb site, but inexcusable mistakes and unreal wishful thinking play a very important role in this. 8. But through this, the researchers and would-be researchers make sense of unrealistic facts, which are devoid of any truth, because for quite some time, nothing more is noticeable or traceable on the slope strain, where the burial place caved in as a result of the destruction of the tomb and the slope's collapse. 9. Nevertheless, false and misleading research will continue to operate, namely into the third millennium, where for a longer time, it will be erroneously maintained that the tomb site of Jmanuel was actually found. 10. And just concerning this tomb cave, in which you found the scrolls of Judas Iscariot, a few more things will happen in the coming time, around the middle or the end of the last decade of this century, which will confirm my words. 11. You will become acquainted with a very interesting and enthusiastic young man, who will strive for these things when you inform him about the tomb site and about the destruction of the same. 12. Currently, he is still in his younger years, but in the course of time, he will become a very well-known man with respect to extraterrestrial missiles and all things associated therewith. 13. Also, he will take up your and our contact history and will represent this worldwide. 14. Yet this will only happen with difficulty and on difficult detours, which will be due to your wife, who has already worked for some time in secret as well as in open form against you and your mission and who regularly carries out traitorous things that cause you and the group members harm and strife. 15. However, he will be the man who will also perform investigations in Jerusalem, in connection with the Talmud Jmanuel and Isa Rashid, and who will also find out that Jmanuel's tomb site and the aforementioned hillside are actually destroyed. 16. He will then also record this fact photographically. Billy, those are some pieces of news again. Evidently, you've had rather decent looks into the future or even traveled into the future. But may one ask, who this mysterious man will be, I mean, from where he comes and what his name will be? Quetzal, 17. That is no secret. 18. He lives in Germany and is named Michael Hussemann. Translator's note. The following is an original English article written by James Deardorff. It appears in this section of this contact report in the original German book. The article can also be viewed at James Deardorff's website. Meir's recollection of the tomb site. Around 1960, Isa Rashid was prompted, by the same ETs who later contacted Meir, to locate the tomb site where the Talmud Jmanuel, TJ, lay buried. However, from what Meir later learned, Rashid didn't then take any action to explore the site or dig his way into it and soon forgot just where it was. In L963, however, when Meir was visiting him and they were walking along outside and south of Jerusalem's old city, Meir was himself prompted to look out at the hillside and notice a small dark cleft or hole up on the slope, partially obscured by bushes. According to Meir's recollection in August L997, this hole was about 30 centimeters, or a foot, on a side. He reached into his pack sack for his flashlight and peered into the hole to notice that it continued inwards. So he proceeded to dig away rocks and earth until the hole was large enough that they could crawl inside. Meir remembers that a shrub growing next to this entrance was a Meramei plant. After more exploring inside the tomb site, they noticed something buried underneath a flat rock, and it turned out to be TJ scrolls, encased in resin, along with a few small artifacts. Meir's foreword within the translated TJ document continues the story from there, but gives no description of the tomb, which Meir learned later had been the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, which is mentioned in the Gospel of Matthew. To the best of his 34-year-old recollection, Meir drew the sketch below of a plan view of the tomb. A member of his support group, Figu, labeled it in English. The tomb is recollected to have been 3.5 to 4 meters in length. The outside slope of the hill is labeled as having been covered with rock, dirt and bushes. In the rear of the tomb, there was a narrow tunnel leading out to what had once been a second entrance, long since blocked with earth. This smaller, second entrance would have faced out onto the slope around a bend from where the tomb's main entrance had been. This was the entrance, exit through which Jmanuel received medical attention from Joseph and some Hindu friends he had sought out, and from which they exited very early in the morning 3 days later, according to the TJ. This picture is consistent with guards actually having been posted at the tomb, as in Matthew 27:65-66, to safeguard it from any who would enter in and steal the body. The TJ indicates that this posting of the guards occurred a day or two earlier than in Matthew, more in keeping with the Gospel of John's timing, and so did not occur on a Sabbath when chief priests and Pharisees would have been reluctant to send a deputation to Pilate to ask for the guards. It is not inconceivable that those who helped Manuel recover within the tomb could slip into the secret entrance on the side without being observed or suspected of anything by the guards. Apparently, this tomb site has not yet been explored by archaeologists. Ufologist Michael Hassemann of Düsseldorf, Germany, editor of magazine 2000+, explored the general area where the tomb was located in July 998. He retracted the route that Meir and Rashid had traversed in L963, to the best of Meir's recollections, while in contact with Meir by cellular phone. It is located along the south slope of the Hinnom Valley, not too far from its confluence with the Kidron Valley, and within the Akeldama tombs area, south of the old city of Jerusalem. This had been a burial ground for foreigners, and Joseph of Arimathea likely was a foreigner, since the location of Arimathea remains unknown. According to an article by Gideon Avni and Zvi Greenhut in Report No. 1 of the Israel Antiquities Authority, the Akeldama Tombs, 1996, the confluence of the Kidron and Hinnom Valleys, south of the old city of Jerusalem, contains one of Jerusalem's richest concentration of rock-hewn tombs. This area, located in the periphery of the village of Silwan, was one of the main burial grounds of Jerusalem. The use of the south part of the Hinnom Valley as burial grounds for foreigners is mentioned by Antoninus Martyr, who visited Jerusalem in about 560s. Apparently, years after the Potter's Field was renamed the Field of Blood, Akeldama, it became enlarged to encompass adjacent areas of pre-existing tombs, including the tomb site of Joseph of Arimathea. The Akeldama site is mentioned by that name in Acts 1:19. From what Hassemann learned from Meir, he had been informed by one of the Pleiadians, Plegerans, Floina, in June of 1998 that sometime after 1973, they had caused a landslide to occur down and over the hillside containing the tomb site. If so, this would be very consistent with their strategy of ensuring that they do not force truth upon people who are not in any way prepared to accept it, and one way of doing this is to allow original evidence to be destroyed while allowing truth in the form of secondary evidence to be available. Hassemann believes he located the landslide, rubble ravine, within the Akeldama tombs region, which marks the approximate location. The photograph below, courtesy of Michael Hassemann, indicates this area, with the probable site lying a little below the heavy arrowhead. The photo looks due south and was shot from just outside the present south wall of the old city. Hassemann was impressed that although Meir has not been back there to view the region, the site he described over the cell phone contained the landslide, rubble ravine. It would seem futile, even if permission could be gained, to attempt to detect what is left of the tomb site underneath the rubble, as all the artifacts inside it had been removed in L963. Translator's note, the two black and white photos above are not labeled in the original German book, but my best educated guess is that the first photo is a close-up shot of the more probable site, which is marked by the heavy arrowhead on the color photo. The second photo, then, is likely a close-up shot of the less probable site. Billy, I am surprised. And since we are already at it, when I was allowed to travel with Askit back into Jmanuel's time and also actually meet him, whereby I could speak with him using the language converter, there, he told me his life story, which was very different from what is maintained in the New Testament. With certainty, it arose from his explanations that he was in no way religious and, therefore, was no religious faith bringer or religious revolutionary. Actually, he was a revolutionary, he said so himself, but not in the sense of a religious form but rather in relation to the true teaching of the Spirit, as this is also clear from the Talmud Jmanuel. He said that he was very unpopular with the superiors, the rulers as well as the scribes, etc., and that his life was endangered as a result of his revolutionary teaching, for he enlightened the people and advocated for their freedom in every respect. He did this in such a way because, on the one hand, this was his mission that he had to fulfill here since ages ago, across different personalities and across different reincarnations of his spirit form, and on the other hand, because this was also the desire of his parents, Mary and Joseph, who did not hold to the old traditional and falsified teachings. And as I could learn from Jmanuel, when I asked him about it, the story of the carpenter's son is not correct, for his foster father, Joseph, had not been a simple carpenter but rather the owner of a small carpentry, with various workers who fulfilled his orders for him. Joseph had already learned the craft as a carpenter from the ground up with his father, who had already originally placed a ship carpentry on the legs. Thus, Joseph and Mary, as well as Jmanuel and his brothers and sisters, hadn't been simple folk from the common people, but according to Jmanuel, they would have enjoyed a degree of prosperity, which also allowed it that Father Joseph and Mother Mary, as well as all children, could learn to read and write. Thus, Joseph was an independent craftsman with his own business, so to speak, and just as independent were also Jmanuel's brothers, who pursued their own crafts. And as Jmanuel said, he, too, was very independent and autonomous, was an expert of reading and writing, and earned his living through the spreading of the spiritual teaching, for which he received donations, which he did not administer himself. However, rather, he let these be administered by one of his disciples. Quetzal, 19. Those are issues that are familiar to me. Billy, aha. Then you should also know that it was in no way the Jewish people who bore the guilt for the fact that Jmanuel was sentenced to death by the cross. In fact, it was such that the Roman garrison ruled in Jerusalem at that time, and its laws possessed validity. Only the Jewish scribes and the Jewish leaders were actually guilty of the fact that Jmanuel was sentenced to death, although, a huge misunderstanding also contributed to this, when Jmanuel was asked the question as to whether the accusation was correct. When he said, "You said it," he didn't mean that the alleged accusation was true, but the meaning of his words was that he meant that the questioner said it. And it was precisely this misunderstanding that was the deciding factor for the guilty sentencing. The scribes and the rulers, however, who fought vehemently against Jmanuel's teaching, were true Jews, and they were the actual ones who strove to eliminate Jmanuel, and to be sure, finally and for all time, through an execution. At the same time, the Jewish people themselves had nothing to say here because they were forbidden to interfere in any imponderable court matters, etc. Nevertheless, as spectators, the people, as a rule, were allowed to do so, but as I said, they wouldn't have had any authority for a verdict. But as always, it was also the case with those who were authorized that under them, there was a certain percentage of the mob that was strongly greased with pieces of silver from the Jewish scribes and elders, as well as from the synagogue big shots, etc., in order to cry out for the death penalty when those who were responsible for sentencing, and, thus, not the Jewish people, were asked for the verdict. Thus, it was the paid-up and fired-up mob that cried out for crucifixion, therefore, the Jewish people bore absolutely no guilt for this. In fact, it was also the case that the actual process was carried out by the Jewish elders, priests, scribes, and other public officials, with the chief priests possessing great power. They were, indeed, the main ones who wanted to dissuade Jmanuel from his mission efforts, and as I said, by all of their available means. But all of these who were responsible cannot be regarded as Jewish people, who, in many respects, were actually and truly more on Jmanuel's side than on the side of the chief priests, elders, scribes, and other public officials, for under these, very many of the Jews suffered. But the fact that the blame for Jmanuel's crucifixion is placed upon them is based on deliberately false political, theological and, thus, religious accusations, which should serve the purpose, and which had the intention, of denigrating the Jews and lifting up Christianity high into the sky. And precisely from this arose the hatred of the Jews, to which millions of Jews and Jewish friends fell victim in the Second World War, through the inhumane and degrading madness of the Final Solution. What is still to be said concerning the trial before Pilate probably needs no great explanation, for the whole thing was just a formality, in order to satisfy the Roman rite and law. But what is to be said in relation to the first trial by the Jewish officials, who partly consisted of chief priests, scribes, and elders, who influenced the rest? It was, indeed, the case that it was an effective process, even though this has long been challenged by various sides. Sfirth taught me all this. Quetzal, 20. You are very detailed, and everything is completely accurate. Billy, now, in this whole connection, only Jmanuel's journey to Kashmir in India is missing and his work there, as well as his death at the age of about 115 years and his burial. It is repeatedly asserted that this does not correspond to the truth and that Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad of Qadian, the founder of the Islamic sect Ahmadiyya, had told fibs with the story that he had discovered Jmanuel's grave in Srinagar, India. As Sfirth already explained to me, this corresponds, at least, to a form of reality because the founder of the sect wasn't actually the discoverer of the tomb. Rather, a man named Kanish Karashtrakuta found the tomb in the year AD 746. All this is vehemently denied, however, by all sorts of scientists and would-be scientists, as well as by would-be know-it-alls. Quetzal, 21. That will also continue to remain so, for know-it-alls and wrong scientists, etc. never die out. 22. Nevertheless, what Sfirth explained to you undoubtedly corresponds to the truth because we've clarified these issues very precisely, and thus, there is no doubt that Jmanuel had worked in India, was also married there, and fathered several children, of which a son went to Jerusalem during his older years and hid Judas Iscariot's scrolls in Jmanuel's tomb, where you then found them in 1964, when Isa Rashid led you there. Billy, thanks for your information. Then something else, the creative spirit form of the person is wrongly designated as the soul, but at the same time, the value of the psyche embodies this according to today's better understanding and sense. Now, the spirit form, that is what the person designates as the soul, which is capable of wandering according to Christian and other religious faiths, even the so-called soul wandering, is denied, especially by medical science and by many other would-be knowledge directions, as well as its ability to be reincarnated. How long will it be until the incorrigible ones acknowledge the fact, as it is even set forth by the spiritual teaching, that the spirit form actually exists and is arranged into reincarnations? Quetzal, 23. With great certainty, the 20th century will bring no scientific insight relating to this. 24. However, it will look different after the turn of the millennium, as a look into the future of a related form has proven. Billy, then we'll see. One asked about Glenn Miller. He was a jazz musician who disappeared one day during the war, without a trace, and was declared as missing. Can you give any information about this? Because to this day, it is still puzzling as to where this Glenn Miller disappeared. Quetzal, 25. About that, I can explain a few things to you, as it concerns a man who was a musician and, thus, one who falls into our art records. Glenn Miller was inadvertently killed by his own people, that is, by Allied forces, on his way from England to France. 26. He was on his way to Paris to attend a Christmas celebration. 27. He flew his aircraft very low over the English Channel, as American Lancaster aircraft dropped their surplus bombs into the English Channel, without the crews noticing that beneath them, a smaller aircraft crossed their flight path. 28. This aircraft, in which Glenn Miller sat, was hit by the dropped bombs, upon which it exploded, was torn into the smallest pieces, and then plunged into the sea. 29. The small pieces of debris were scattered hundreds of meters, while Glenn Miller was completely torn apart into the smallest particles. 30. This is the real truth, which has no relation at all to the false story that Glenn Miller, for indefinable reasons, died in the arms of a prostitute in Paris. 31.